The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone, and welcome to That's a Laugh. I'm Jennifer Green with the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Thank you for joining me for the next half hour of funny stories, quotes, and other anecdotes that we hope will add a few chuckles to your day. This month's episode is all about friendship. Friends are an essential part of life, helping you get through troubled times, or sometimes helping you get into trouble. It can be hard to make new friends, but then keeping friendships strong can sometimes seem challenging as well. Not to worry. Today's authors have stories all about friends and keeping friendships long-lasting. We'll get pointers on making a good impression when you want to make new friends, advice on how to prevent losing friends once you get them, insight into being the friend of someone who's achieved a bit of fame, and then the rules one should follow to be a best friend. First up, CuratedQuotes.com offers these words on friends from Oprah Winfrey. Lots of people want to ride with you in the limo, but what you want is someone who will take the bus with you when the limo breaks down. Okay, so how does one go about finding those types of friends? First, you have to connect with people at places, like, say, at a networking event. From the book, I Need a Lifeguard Everywhere But the Pool, by Lisa Scottolini and Francesca Saratella, published in 2017. Francesca's chapter, titled, Hi, My Name Is... It's a good networking opportunity. If there's a more anxiety-inducing statement than that, I don't know it. Networking is the worst. I like people, and I'm outgoing, but I like connecting with people on a real level. I have a great internal radar for genuine, down-to-earth people, and I bond with them quickly. I make friends. I don't make contacts. Only sociopaths enjoy interacting with others for the purpose of using them to their professional advantage. I was invited to a best-selling author's publishing anniversary party. The author being feted is one of the nicest in the business, and I wanted to go celebrate him. But I knew, by virtue of it being an industry party, I wouldn't be allowed to just eat the cake and enjoy myself. I'd have to network. And I'd be flying solo. My mother was also invited, but she wasn't free. My agents hadn't been invited, but they were very eager for me to go. They even emailed me links to the professional bios and photos of several editors who would likely be at the party that I should try and make an impression on. I felt like I was a spy receiving a dossier of my targets. Only, instead of charming the pants off these women, I was supposed to charm the book contracts out of them. What's the first thing a good spy needs? A good disguise. I scheduled a haircut for right before the party so that my normally kinky, curly hair would look smooth and professional. Confidence from the outside in. As soon as I arrived, I was greeted by a big table of name tags, and relief washed over me. I love a good name tag. A name like Francesca Saratella hits a lot of people's ears like Fettuccine Spaghetti Ella the first time they hear it. Seeing it in writing helps. I clipped that thing to my right boob with pride. But once I got into the room, only about 15% of people were wearing theirs. Yo, adults too cool for name tags at a professional event? Get over yourself. We are all too old to be cool. I'm only 30, and did you hear me just use the word yo? I rest my case. Plus, in the book world, people are best known for their words, not their image. I was terrified of embarrassing myself by failing to recognize some super famous author. If you pass on the name tag, maybe pin your latest book jacket to your shirt. Scanning the room, it was like the high school cafeteria all over again, and I had no one to sit with. I felt painfully self-conscious when I was standing still. I told myself, you're a shark. You're fine as long as you keep moving. As I weaved through the tables, I held my head high, peering around as if I might be looking for a friend, all the while trying to catch someone's eye for an opening. But it wasn't working. Everyone had their cliques. The book industry is comprised of a lot of nice, normal people who work in offices, like the editors, agents, publicists, cover artists, booksellers, etc., who interact with each other often, plus the authors, who are hermit weirdos. 99% of my professional life is conducted alone, behind a computer screen, usually eating something that drops crumbs on my lap. I've published 8 books over as many years, and I can count the number of colleagues I regularly interact with on one hand. If book parties are high school, authors are chess club. By the hors d'oeuvres, I zeroed in on a group of particularly smiley women, definitely not the mean girls table. They said they worked for one of the big publishing houses, and I told them I was just finishing my first novel, and lo and behold, they asked me about my book. I launched into my elevator pitch, excitedly thinking, "Oh my God, I'm doing it. I'm networking. I'm advancing my career this very minute." The woman seemed into it. I thought we were really clicking until she asked me, "What are the grades?" "I'm sorry? I carried a 4.0 in high school." "The book, what reading level is it?" "Oh, no. My book is definitely adult." "Well, not adult. Not like porn." I laughed nervously. "We work in the children's division." "Oh," my voice raised an octave. "That's nice." Welp, 5 minutes down, 1 hour and 55 minutes to go. I was too intimidated to approach groups of 4 or more people, but I would hover around the smaller groups, and if I sensed a lull, I tried to compliment my way into the conversation. "Wow, I love your dress. Hi, I'm Francesca." It's like a platonic woman-to-woman pickup line. I oohed and aahed over so many outfits and accessories. My next career move should be on the Home Shopping Network. I spotted a woman with the most beautiful curly hair, a pile of chestnut ringlets. "You have to tell me what hair products you use, because your hair looks amazing." She lit up and we started talking. "Okay, I'm buying all this stuff," I said. "Thanks for the tips. We curly heads gotta stick together." She smiled, but her brow furrowed. "But you don't have curly hair." My blowout, the essential part of my "please take me seriously" disguise, I'd completely forgotten. I explained that I don't really look like this. I just tried to change everything about myself for this event. She laughed. I don't remember what her job was or if there was any purpose to our conversation, but we were buds for the rest of the party. Next time I have to go to one of these networky things, I won't come as a spy or a shark or a smooth-talking salesman. I'll come as myself with a name tag. Okay, first step, be yourself when meeting people. But what about when you are talking with people after you've befriended them? How do you prevent differences of opinion from ruining friendships? Well, Whoopi Goldberg explains in her book, Is It Just Me or Is It Nuts Out There?, published in 2010, that mostly it boils down to respect. Chapter 17, You Respect My Opinion, I'll Respect Yours. It used to be all right to disagree. It made life interesting. Now it draws blood. End of discussion can mean the end of a nice lunch or a friendship. It's crazy. Can we turn that around? Maybe. A good starting place is cutting each other some slack. I hear people say, "Why do you always have to have an opinion?" Or, "Why does that person always have to have something to say?" Well, maybe it's because they do have something to say. We have a choice, you know. We don't have to listen. We can leave the room. We don't have to agree with it or like it, but it's their right to express themselves. Now, there are some things that are not okay to say, like when you slander people, not a good thing. It's pretty simple. You want respect? You've got to give respect. Respect my opinion, and I'll respect yours. If I want to offer you my opinion, you have two choices. You can listen or not. And you can make that decision just like that. Now, if you don't want to hurt my feelings by walking away, you can say, you know what? I really don't want to talk about this. I'm not really interested in a deep airing of this subject. Or screw it. You can walk away and let me deal with whatever the consequences are of expressing my opinion. And you know what? If you let me deal with those consequences, I might start to realize that not everybody wants to hear it. So I might actually come to the conclusion myself. We all have people in our lives who come from opposite sides of issues from us. When we get with these people, who we otherwise dearly love, some of them can't resist starting in, pushing all our buttons. It bugs us, but if we love them, we tolerate it, and hopefully move on in the conversation. The sooner, the better. Most of the time, people just want a chance to speak. They want someone to know that they are thinking about this or that. Sometimes they don't get a lot of opportunity to talk about things in depth with folks. So they wait until they get around people they feel that they can get in deep with and say what's on their mind. And sometimes it's just because they want to hear themselves talk. Or they are desperate for contact, even if what they're saying pisses me off. It's respect again. And because I know my patience is going to be tested when I see them, I do a self-talk beforehand so I can remind myself to be cool and maintain the respect. It doesn't always work, but I do try. But the tone of things is definitely changing. You've seen it, I'm sure. Where it used to be, I disagree with you on this or that issue, now it's, you're an a-hole, or you're an American. And when things get heated up like that, bad things can happen. If you don't think so, let me remind you of a certain healthcare argument on a California sidewalk that grew into a street fight and someone got his finger bitten off. Now, I have been involved in some highly passionate discussions, but I can assure you that I have not once chomped off a finger. Wasn't even tempted. I think we can keep things civil. As one might say, you could act that. What happens when people get into attack mode is, instead of talking with each other, they talk at each other. There is a big difference. It's about give and take. Talking at somebody is different from talking with them, because when you're talking with them, you actually have to listen to what they're saying. Then you respond, or not. There's a back and forth that happens when you're talking with somebody. But when you're talking at somebody, you don't hear them. You're not listening. It's all about getting out your point. And that may be fine, but it doesn't move you forward. Because people glaze over when you talk at them, especially when you yell at them. Now, to be clear, I'm talking about yelling at somebody, not discussions that get passionate. There's a difference. Most of the time, if you talk with people and it stays a conversation, even if it gets passionate, you can move forward from it. It can even be fun. It's the difference between sparring and fighting. But the minute you shut down that two-way route, trouble is close by. Because then you are not challenging somebody. You're pretty much telling them that they have no right to think or speak or feel what they're feeling. I don't know when this started to change, but oftentimes people do not listen at all. They hear what they want to hear, or they only hear that one little thing you say that gives them permission to be angry at you, ignoring the rest. Kaboom! On the other hand, some people are more open. I'm with someone on a constant basis whose mind changes a lot and says, I've learned a lot of stuff. I'm talking specifically about my friend Elizabeth Hasselbeck. I don't know if she exactly says, you've changed my mind, because I don't know if you can really change somebody's mind, but you can at least have a discussion, and they can look at it differently and ponder that. Elizabeth knows that, to me, it's a discussion. We get to talk and we get passionate, but it's never personal, which is why she will often be able to hear me and maybe say, oh, I hadn't thought about it from that perspective. Let me think about this and see how I feel about it. And that's why I love her. Is it just me, or have we grown more cynical? Maybe with good reason, maybe not. But it still does not give us license to run amok over each other. Just because somebody calls you the ugly American doesn't mean you get to go and be the ugly American. There were stories that, even though Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill were ideological foes, they still socialized. Those dudes would debate in the day, and at night they'd hang. It used to be possible to have those head-butting things over issues and still be good friends. Used to be. Maybe it still is. I got a glimmer of hope when I learned Senators Ted Kennedy and Orrin Hatch were such good pals. Think about it. If we only adapt ourselves to people who think exactly like we do, what's next? You have to look exactly like I do? You have to smell exactly like I do? How do you learn anything? Why wouldn't you want to hear a variety of opinions? There are some basics we all agree on. Don't kill anybody. Don't yell fire in a crowded theater. Don't drop air biscuits in the elevator. There are some basics, yet there are still some problems in the way we relate to each other these days. I even know of some people who won't date someone who they disagree with politically. Kinda dumb, but hey, that's their choice. But what's the point? This may surprise you, but I have a lot of friends who are staunch conservatives. Some don't believe in a woman's right to choose, or in gay marriage, or in interracial dating. In spite of those things, I still like them as friends. I don't understand or condone their beliefs, but some of these people are really funny or are deep thinkers, and I think sometimes it spices things up to have a little bit of healthy discussion. At least, I used to think so. But I listen to people now, and it's believe what I believe or get out. A tad Taliban-esque, isn't it? And more it's don't cross this line. But because I carry a spray can, I draw my own lines as I go. Most of the quotes and stories presented here on Tao are from celebrities, whether very well known or a little bit famous, as Mindy Kaling likes to describe her own celebrity status. You ever wonder what it's like to be the best friend of someone who has achieved a bit of fame? You are not alone. Here is an excerpt from Mindy Kaling's book, Why Not Me?, published in 2015, from the chapter, Minor Fame Has Changed Me. Cool women want to be my best friend. One very gratifying compliment I sometimes hear is that women want to be my best friend. This endlessly amuses my actual best friend, Jocelyn, because in her estimation, I'm a good friend, but not that great. Here are the pros of being best friends with me. I am one of the best people you could take to your ex-boyfriend's party that you were dreading going to. I am always up for dessert. I am always up for skinny dipping. If you want to talk to any hot guy at any party, I will so be that girl who gets drunk and introduces us, then inches away so you can roll your eyes about me and sell me out so you can bond with him. I will dance almost anywhere with anyone. I have one of the sickest closets of clothes, and I will let you borrow anything and spend hours doing fashion shows in my bedroom with you. There are no cons. Okay, let's see. You've met the friends by being yourself? Check. You've kept the friends by respecting their opinions? Check. But not so fast. What do you do when you are not just a friend, but the best friend? Well, there are certain guidelines that must be followed, or at least should. Lucky for us, Mindy Kaling outlines them for us in her book, Is Everyone Hanging Out Without Me? And Other Concerns, published in 2011. The chapter, Best Friend Rights and Responsibilities. For almost 8 years, I lived with my best friends in either a cramped college dorm room or a small Brooklyn apartment. Normally, these are the circumstances that drive one roommate to get engaged to some random guy super fast because she is so annoyed with her living situation. We managed it well, however, because we maintained an informal best friend code of conduct. I've outlined its most vital aspects here. I can borrow all your clothes. Anything in your closet, no matter how fancy, is co-owned by me, your best friend. I can borrow it for as long as I want. If I get something on it or lose it, I should make all good faith attempts to get it cleaned or buy you a new one, but I don't need to do that, and you still have to love me. If I ruin something of yours and don't replace it, you're allowed to talk crap about me to your other friends for one calendar year. That's it. Then you have to get over it. One stipulation to my borrowing your clothes is that you have to have worn the item at least once before I borrow it. I'm not a monster. We sleep in the same bed. If we're on a trip or if our boyfriends are away and there's a bed bigger than a twin, we're partnering up. It is super weird for us not to share a bed. How else will we talk until we fall asleep? I must be 100% honest about how you look, but gentle. Your boyfriend is never going to tell you that your skirt is too tight and riding up too high on you. In fact, you shouldn't even have asked him, poor guy. He wants to have sex with you no matter how pudgy you are. I am the only person besides your mom who has the right and responsibility to tell you that. I should never be overly harsh when something doesn't look good on you, because I know you are fragile about this, and so am I. I will employ the gentle, vague expression, I'm not crazy about that on you, which should mean to you, holy crap, take that off, that looks terrible. I owe it to you to give feedback like a cattle prod, painful, but quick. I can ditch you, within reason. I can ditch you to hang out with a guy, but only if that possibility has been discussed and getting a ride home practicalities have been worked out prior to the event. In return, I need to talk about you a lot with that guy so he knows how much I love you. I will take care of your kid if you die. I can't even write about this. It's too sad. But yes, I will do that. And you will have one awesome little kid who hears endless stories about how amazing and beautiful and perfect you were. Incidentally, your kid will grow up loving Indian food. I will nurse you back to health. If you are crippled with pain because of a UTI, I need to haul ass to CVS to get you some medicine fast. I should also try to pick up a fashion magazine and the candy you like, because distracting you from your pain is part of nursing you back to health. We will trade off being social activities chair for our outings. On trips together, I promise to man up and be the person who drives the rental car sometimes, or uses my credit card and has people pay me back later. Someone needs to check on Yelp to see what the good brunch place is. Neither of us gets to be the princess all the time. I get that. I will keep your favorite feminine hygiene product at my house. Even though no one uses maxi pads anymore, like you do, weirdo, I will keep a box at my house for when you come over. Same with your contact lens solution. I can't believe you won't get LASIK already. You can afford it. I know you read someone went blind from it, but that was like 20 years ago. Not getting LASIK at this point is like being that girl in 2006 who didn't have a cell phone. I will try to like your boyfriend 5 times. This is a fair number of times to hang out with your boyfriend and withhold judgment. When I take a shower at your place, I won't drop the towel on the floor. Your home isn't a hotel. I forget sometimes because you make it so comfortable for me. If you're depressed, I will be there for you. As everyone knows, depressed people are some of the most boring people in the world. I know this because when I was depressed, people fled, except my best friends. I will be there for you during your horrible breakup or getting fired from your job, or if you're just having a bad couple of months or year. I will hate it and find you really tedious, but I promise I won't abandon you. If our phone conversation gets disconnected, there's no need to call back. I get it. You get it. We take forever getting off the phone anyway. This was a blessing. I will hate and re-like people for you. But you can't get mad if I can't keep track. Robbie, don't we hate him? No, we love him. Okay, sorry. It is okay to take me for granted. I know when you fall in love with someone that you will completely forget about me. That hurts my feelings, but it is okay. Please try to remember to text me if you can. If you know I have something going on in my life, like a work promotion or something. No two people are better than us. We effing rock. No one can beat us. Okay, my dear listeners, looks like I have just enough time to leave you with these parting words from curatedquotes.com. 3 quotes, all from unknown authors. Friends give you a shoulder to cry on, but best friends are ready with a shovel to hurt the person that made you cry. Friends come and go like the waves of the ocean, but the true ones stay like an octopus on your face. And finally, never let your friends get lonely. Keep disturbing them. I'm Jennifer Green with the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Join me again next month for That's a Laugh. I'll be back on the 4th Tuesday of every month, and I hope you'll listen again next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. Just click on the podcast link under the listen bar at the top of the homepage. Are you enjoying the show? Do you have any amusing quotes or anecdotes you'd like to share? We'd love to hear from you. Let us know. Please call us with questions, requests, or other comments about this or any of your TRRS programs at 919-832-5138. That number, one more time, is 919-832-5138.